giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Vingan here with you on Wednesday evening, joined this week by Max Herz of the Preds Radio Network. Max, how are you tonight?
Hi, Adam. I'm good. Those of you who just heard me on Smashville Live, this is not a time warp. One show is recorded. One is live. So don't get too confused. We won't tell you which is which, but the word live is in one of the show's titles. So
I wanted our listeners to believe that you could indeed time warp. So
No, I don't want the expectations for me and my molecular propriety to get blown out of proportion. The ability to time
fancy
and space
words
travel.
There.
Yeah, all things I can't do, so they mean
suspension
nothing.
Of disbelief is important, Max, but we'll power through. So the Predators are 0-3-0 to start the regular season. They lost last night 7-3 to the Seattle Kraken. It's the first time the Predators have dropped their first three games of a season in regulation since 2006. Now, when I bring this up to Willie Donick, he's quick to point out that 2006-2007 team, there you go, won 51 games. So 0-3-0 is not a death sentence in the NHL. They do play 82 games, but it's the first time in a long time that the Predators have started a season with three consecutive regulation losses. There are a number of things that haven't clicked yet. For example, 5-on-5 scoring. The Predators have been outscored 11-3 at 5-on-5 to start this season. 3 5-on-5 goals in three games. They're 1-for-11 on the power play, and we'll get into this a little bit later. I'm not as concerned about that as I am about other things that haven't worked out for this team. They have not led at any point this season. By my very quick research, they are the only team in the NHL who has not held a lead at any point in a game this season. When you think about the start of the season, we knew that there were going to be some growing pains, integrating the new players into the lineup, all of those things. What has stood out to you as to why things have gone awry through three games for this team?
Well, of all the things you listed, Adam, the biggest one to me is that they have not led. And Andrew Brunette has commented on this somewhat directly, saying, we can't wait until we get behind to turn it on, which is what happened against the Stars in the opener on Thursday. They got down 4-1, worked their way back, had a hell of an effort at the end, 6-on-5, probably deserved to get that game to overtime. But based on how the game started, they didn't deserve to get that game to overtime. So what part of it matters more? Going down early or coming back late? And then last night, in that loss against the Kraken, they storm back with a few good shifts after going down a really ugly 2-0 to start the game. And then they tie it again in the second period. A Jonathan Marchessault starts a little scrum out of nowhere to wake everybody up. But they aren't able to kind of create their own buzz to get it going unless they're down first. And in the game against the Red Wings, where they never came back because they didn't score, they had tons of chances, but they never really led the pack in the game.
So one thing that has really stood out to me are the number of odd man rushes that the Predators have allowed through three games. At 5-on-5 specifically, the Predators have allowed 22 odd man rushes against. That translates to 9.79 per 60 minutes at 5-on-5, which is the worst total in the NHL. Two of the goals scored against the Predators last night were on odd man rushes. Oliver Bjorkstrand's goal that made it 2-0 and Jaden Schwartz's goal that made it 4-3, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the game-winning goal. So two goals against last night off of odd man rushes. It's been an issue in all three games. Why have the Predators struggled to get back on defense so far this season, in your mind?
Those two last night were really not pretty, and I think it was a combination of losing a puck battle in the offensive zone or over-pinching in the offensive zone. So the first one, the Bjorkstrand goal, was a 2-on-1, and it was just a little pinch by Jeremy Lauzon that ended up being a 2-on-1 from below the red line in for the Kraken. So that was a pretty easy one for them to spring. And then the second one that you mentioned, which was a 4-on-2, really, and you could even argue it was a 4-on-1 the way it played out down low. All three of the forwards were in on the forecheck. They were all in the same corner. One bump got past them, and then bam, their entire team was off. So it's, I think you could pinpoint it and say it's lack of cohesion in the system between those two things. When is somebody going to pinch? Where are the forwards on the forecheck? Are they all in the same place? Obviously, that's not exactly how the Predators' forecheck is drawn up. You're not going to usually see three guys crashing the same corner. And if you do, you better get the puck or at least keep your stick down and slow it down. So I think miscommunications are causing those. And Michael McCarron said after the game as well, odd man rushes come after you lose a puck battle. So that's the message internally, is we got to win more puck battles. We got to have more possession. But it's interesting in tandem with what the Stars did against the Preds, which was stretch passes and stretching the crap out of the ice and trying to get behind the Predators' D.
So one area as well that the Predators have struggled in this season, and this is a term that I'm going to use a lot on this program, it's called expected goals. And for those who are unfamiliar with that term, it's basically, it tells you how many goals a team or player is expected to score based on the danger of the shots they take. And there are factors that play into that, such as the proximity to the net, the speed and the angle, change of the play leading up to the shot, like a seam pass or a low to high play, the pressure of defenders when taking the shot. There's a lot that goes into it. But basically, expected goals tells you that based on the quality of the chances you're creating, here's how many goals you should be scoring. At 5-on-5 per 60 minutes, the Predators are 30th in the NHL out of 32 teams in expected goals at 5-on-5 per 60 minutes, which is a fancy way of saying the Predators are struggling to create high-quality, high-percentage looks at the net at 5-on-5. At all situations, I think they're in the middle of the pack, but a lot of that has to do with the play of their power play, which we'll get into later in the show. But at 5-on-5, they've had a hard time getting those grade A looks. And especially with the firepower this team has and added in the offseason, I think there was an expectation that they would be better in that area.
I think it's the same thing they struggled with at the beginning of last season. They struggled to generate chances. They struggled to dominate games offensively. And the interesting thing about it this year is, Adam, they have outpossessed their opponent.
They
it's
have.
Felt like. So, and I know the numbers back that up. It's felt that way too. So I think that's the worrisome part of it, is they've had the puck but haven't been able to generate those high danger chances.
The good news is that they do have the puck. They do have the sustained offensive zone pressure and the shot attempts. So at least they're getting the looks. They're not being caved in that regard, but it's getting to the slot, the inner slot, and creating those chances for their high-powered offensive players to cash in on. Preds insiders here on 102.5, 106.3, the game. Coming up next, the second line is still in flux. We knew it was going to be a big part of this team's success, and so far, Andrew Brunette has been unable to find a group that clicks. We'll break that down next. Max Herz with Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Preds insiders, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Adam Vingan with Max Herz. Don't listen to him in the previous segment. He did indeed time warp from Cool Springs to the studio to do this show after finishing Smashville Live. Max is a man of many talents, as you've probably heard him calling games on the road, his pre- and post-game responsibilities. Don't count out Max Herz to be able to time warp. I'm thinking of another way to say time warp, but I can't, so I'm just going to say time warp over and over again.
Well, now you got me thinking about Rocky Horror.
That is true. It certainly has been a horror show, there you go, for the Nashville Predators to start the season 0-3-0. And just as we all expected, the only other team in the NHL without a standings point so far, the Colorado Avalanche, who are also 0-3-0 to start the season and have been outscored 20-10 in three games. 20 goals allowed in three games for the Colorado Avalanche. So it's not, it's an 0-3-0 start is certainly, it's not a good thing. You don't want to be 0-3-0. If you look at the division standings already in the Central Division, the Dallas Stars are 8 points up on the Predators. They're 4-0. And those 8 points can mean a lot over the course of a full season. But I'm certainly not mashing the panic button yet. But there are reasons for concern through three games for the Predators. And one of those things is the second line. And when the Predators went out and spent a lot of money in the offseason signing Steven Stamkos, signing Jonathan Marchessault, one thing that we keyed in on was the Predators now have the opportunity to create a second scoring line that can take the pressure off of the Forsberg-O'Reilly-Nyquist line that really carried the offense last season. I think we all expected Tommy Novak to get that first shot at second line center. Indeed, he did. But through the first three games of the season, the Predators have started a different second line. Now, I want to emphasize that lines change over the course of games. So just because three players start together doesn't mean they're going to stay together throughout the game. But the Predators have started a different second line in each game. In the first game, it was Stamkos and Marchessault with Novak. In the second game at Detroit, it was Stamkos and Marchessault with Colton Sissons in the middle. Against the Seattle Kraken, Stamkos shifted to center with Marchessault on the right wing and Cole Smith on the left wing. So three different starting second lines, and none of them have really been able to get any traction. Max, first, let's talk about the decision that Andrew Brunet made for last night's game. What was his rationale for putting Cole Smith on that line, and how do you think that line performed?
I thought they were okay. I don't think that's a line that they would stick with long-term no matter how it went, just because Smith has his role on the fourth line, and I think the way this team wants to play down the road, they need that fourth line to be as valuable as it was last year, and I think Smith has to be a part of that, the way the team shakes out. It was an interesting decision, for sure, and I think it was a decision that showed a little bit of desperation, which I don't think they need to show this early in the year. I think it's okay to still be figuring things out with massive new pieces on the team. So I think they understand whoever it's going to be is going to need a large sample size to fill on that spot. And the Smith decision, to answer your question, made sense in terms of he's a puck hound, he's a forechecker, he's a guy who's going to be in front of the net. And we've seen on the Stamkos even strength shifts basically every shift of the season. Those are the things that he struggled with. He hasn't had the puck on his stick enough, even strength. They haven't had the puck in front enough for him, even strength. He's had a couple of chances on the power play in that high-scoring area, but he hasn't really had them at even strength. So I think that was the rationale behind putting Smith there, and just like the other ones did, it didn't really even last the whole game to start that line.
So Steven Stamkos, through three games, has been credited with two scoring chances at 5-on-5 and one shot on net from the slot area, which is not what you want to see from Steven Stamkos. And there was going to be a learning curve specifically with Stamkos, because when you spend 16 seasons with one team and you play hundreds of games, close to 1,000 games with the same players. In the case of Steven Stamkos in recent years, Nikita Kucherov, Victor Hedman, Braden Point, you develop, instincts. Steven Stamkos knows where Nikita Kucherov is going to pass him the puck. He knows where Victor Hedman's going to set him up for the one-timer on the power play. He's got to relearn a lot of those things. To borrow a term from Tennessee Titans quarterback Will Levis, Steven Stamkos has to rewire his brain a little bit.
Oh, God. No notes from Will Levis for the Preds players, please.
Fair. But Stamkos has to relearn things as well because he spends so much time in one place. But I do think it's imperative that Andrew Brunet allows one of these combinations to stick together for a few games. And even if the results aren't desirable, at least they're getting the reps, so to speak.
Yeah.
So the Predators did not practice today. They'll be back on the ice tomorrow morning for morning skate when they prepare to face the Edmonton Oilers. I'm curious to see what Andrew Brunet decides to do with his line combination, specifically the second line, And I'm hopeful that Brunette will stick with that line for a couple of games so we can get a big enough sample to see if there is a second line that indeed works.
Yeah, and I think if they're going to really give him a leash going in, I think it would be Novak getting another chance there. And Brunette said after the game last night, in a moment of respectable honesty, said, maybe I'm doing too much. Maybe I'm changing the lines too quickly. Maybe I've made too many changes. So I think everything's on the table, like he said this morning. I think there's a reason they started the way they did, though, and they knew what they were doing, and it looked good in preseason. Novak with Stamkos and Marchessault, although they didn't get to play a ton together in games, they looked good when they were on the ice together in the intra-squad scenarios and scrimmages and drills and things like that. So I think that's worth looking back at. I think if they saw anything they liked from Steven Stamkos at center last night, I don't think him being at center was a reason they weren't generating. If they like Stamkos at center, I would love to see Evangelista get a crack with those two at some point.
That's interesting, because I'm wondering what the break glass in case of emergency situation is breaking up that top line. Now, that top line, if I'm not mistaken, has been outscored 2-0 at 5-on-5. So they have not been on the ice for a Predators goal four through three games. They are generating scoring chances. I believe the scoring chance differential with the top line on the ice, Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist, it's 15-6 in favor of the Predators. So they're doing a good job, as they did last year, of generating offense, and scoring chances. They haven't scored yet, but generating offense. I understand why you keep that line together. I wonder if things continue to, you know, to be, you know, stop and start, if Andrew Brunette gives thought to breaking up that top line. What do you think about that?
I think it's definitely in play. I think it was the easiest way to start the season for a lot of reasons. But look, if you want your three best players together, you're going to have to make a change. And whether that's Stamkos playing center with Marchessault and Forsberg, or Forsberg with O'Reilly playing center and either Marchessault or Stamkos on the right wing, if you want to really load up and have a true first line, you are going to have to make a switch.
I've been impressed with Jonathan Marchessault so far this season. I like the energy he brings, and I knew that he was a feisty player. That's how he made a career for himself. He's a great story. What he's been able to do, starting his career in Tampa Bay, going to Florida, becoming a key player for the Panthers, being drafted in the expansion draft by the Vegas Golden Knights, becoming, you know, the franchise leader in so many categories, winning the Conn Smythe Trophy, helping the team win the Stanley Cup. I knew he had an edge to his game. I've always admired his game. But to watch it every night, and you mentioned the tussle that he got in last night that seemed to spark the team. I've been impressed, despite the offense maybe not being there, I've been impressed with the impact he seems to be having on the ice.
Yeah, I've absolutely been enamored watching him this season.
Enamored.
And I hope Preds fans feel the same way, because it's from the moment he showed up. Jonathan Marchessault is the guy for the Preds. He is what they paid for. He is what they wanted. And he is authentically himself. And there is never going to be any other version of Jonathan Marchessault that they see on the ice. And last night, like you said, that's Exhibit A. He turned that game on around. He got hit. He got boarded. I wasn't sure watching live. I did not have a great angle. I wasn't sure if that was an illegal hit. They did call it a board on Ty Cartier from the Kraken. Marchessault wasn't happy with it either way. Cartier had been hitting everybody. He'd been finishing all his checks. So Marchessault went after him. And that was what flipped the game on its head. And if the Predators are able to have a good third period, we're talking about that being the thing that was the impetus for the Preds' first win of the season.
Coming into the season, when I was thinking about that second line with Tommy Novak in the middle, Novak's underlying numbers last season, and really through his NHL career, have been sparkling in terms of playmaking, his ability to pass, his ability to enter the zone with possession, all of those things. So it seemed like a natural fit to put him there. I think where Predators fans were disappointed in Novak was he was a complete non-factor in the postseason against Vancouver. And he has a couple goals this season, but I'm wondering, like, what do you think it's going to take for Tommy Novak to really settle in to that role? Because second line center is a key position for this club. I said before the season, I think he's the X factor. If he struggles in that position, the Predators are in dire straits with their center depth. What do you think it's going to take for Tommy Novak to be more consistent in a top six role for the Predators?
Well, the simple answer is time. And moving the lines around as much as they have is not going to warrant him that. So I think if they go back to him this week, they'll give him a longer look there, whether it's with Stamkos and Marchessault or with two different wingers or another center with him or whatever it may be. I think it's got to be time for him because you know he's going to pull those plays out. The two goals he scored this season have been very different examples of what he does well, but they've both been really important things that he does well. The first one started in the D zone himself, which is a big moment for him to be able to go coast to coast with that with some help along the way, get the puck back, generate a clean entry, get himself open for a breakaway and score against the Stars on Thursday. Then last night against the Kraken, really nice passing play that he was on the end of, went down, took a hit to start the play, then found the soft ice for what ended up being a pretty and easy goal for the Preds. So I think if he gets extended chances to play with Stamkos and Marchessault, I think they will start to understand what he creates. And I think he's someone, Adam, who his line mates need to know him well. And I think that's why we see him succeed so much with Evangelista.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, the game. I know we've been talking about what's been going wrong so far for the Predators, but who or what are some bright spots through three games that maybe the Predators can build off of? We'll get to that next. Max Herz with Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Adam Vingan and Max Herz. There's a blank space in the win column for the Nashville Predators. They're 0-3. I'm catching on to this radio thing. I thought that was pretty clever. I'm going to pat myself on the back for
that. It was definitely a joke.
It was definitely a joke. Someone out there is chuckling to themselves. And if I made one of you laugh, then it was all worth it. So as I said, and as we've talked about, it stinks that the Predators haven't won a game yet. There was a lot of expectation for this team. It's still very, very early. We knew there would be some growing pains. It hasn't happened yet in terms of getting a game in the win column. But the Predators will have another opportunity to do so tomorrow night against the Edmonton Oilers, who got their first win of the season last night against the Philadelphia Flyers. They were 0-3 to start the season, were down 2-0 in that game, came back to win, if I'm not mistaken, 4-3 in overtime. But the Oilers will be here tomorrow, and we'll get into that matchup in the next segment. But Max, I want to talk about some things that are going well for the Predators. And we touched on this, and one thing that actually has me less concerned than you would think is the power play. In terms of goals scored on chances, they are 1-for-11 on the power play. That's not good. We know that. 1-for-11 on the power play with the talent that this team has, you would expect better. But the reason why I'm not as concerned about that as maybe I am the 5-on-5 play, as we discussed in the first segment, is the underlying numbers on the power play are very, very good. So I mentioned expected goals, which is, again, it tells you how many goals a team or player is expected to score based on the danger of the shots they take. So I look at these per 2 minutes because power plays are 2 minutes. The Predators are second in the NHL in expected goals per 2 minutes on the power play, which means they are doing a good job of getting high-quality looks on the power play. They just haven't scored on them yet. They're fifth in scoring chances per 2 minutes on the power play, and they're first in shot attempts per 2 minutes on the power play. So this is a case where, quite frankly, the Predators have just been unlucky on the power play. I don't see a process that is broken on the power play. I see a team that is getting the looks and not scoring on them. The hope is that, as hockey players will often say, when they're in a slump, if you just get one, the floodgates will open. Which is why, although 1-for-11 on the power play is unsightly, I'm not as concerned about that as I am other areas of their game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I did not know how strong those numbers were in terms of their NHL rank. They don't surprise me. But yeah, that's definitely reassuring. And I'm like you, that was not an area where I needed to be reassured about the way the Preds have played. I think especially in the Red Wing game on Saturday, they were all over them. And Cam Talbot was, I mean, he's stopping everything. He stopped literally everything. And it still takes a lot to wrap your brain around that goalie game for a goalie who you would not expect it from in Cam Talbot to go crazy and stop the Preds the way he did. But the Predators on the power play, generated the full width of the ice. They got inside chances. Stamkos had one that really should have been his first goal as a Pred, and Talbot somehow got there, just kind of pounced on it to get him. So I think that game especially is indicative of it.
From an individual level, we talked about Jonathan Marchessault and the energy he brings. I've liked that. I've also liked what I've seen from Brady Shea. You know, we spent so much time talking about Stamkos and Marchessault in free agency that I felt like Brady Shea kind of flew under the radar, despite the fact that the Predators signed him to a 7-year contract worth a total of $49 million. And you know, Brady Shea spent the beginning of his career in the Eastern Conference, started his career with the Rangers, then spent several seasons with the Carolina Hurricanes. So Predators fans didn't see a lot of Brady Shea, although in the COVID-shortened season, the Hurricanes and Predators, of course, played in the playoffs. They shared a division. You saw more of Brady Shea then. But, you know, some people may only know Brady Shea from that Chance the Rapper Saturday Night Live skit from several years ago. But one thing I liked about Brady Shea is he's a really good all-around defender. And, you know, he's sort of settled into a pairing with Luke Shen. He scored his first goal against the Kraken. He's got a really solid all-around game. I was curious about how his game would translate to Nashville, because Carolina has arguably the best defensive system in the NHL. A lot of really good players go there, and their defensive numbers improve because Rod Brind'Amour plays a really solid defensive system. You know, the numbers, again, aren't sparkling for Brady Shea. He's -5. You know, take that for what it's worth. Plus minus is a flawed statistic in my mind, but he is -5. But I see why he was arguably the most coveted defenseman on the free agent market.
Yeah, all around, like you said, is what stands out to me. And this is one of many things where I defer to Hal Gill for his analysis. And he just absolutely loves watching Brady Shea. He's an all-situations defenseman. Start him anywhere, play him with anyone, put him in any spot. And we saw the offensive instincts 4-on-4, getting himself into the perfect area to pick a puck up out of a crowd and score his first goal as a Pred last night.
Roman Josi continues to do Roman Josi things. I mean, not very many players can age as gracefully as Roman Josi. As a 35-year-old man, I wish I could have the head of hair that Roman Josi has in his mid-30s, but we all can't be so lucky. But you know, the ability that he has had to stay this good for so long, just there, how many defensemen can impact a game offensively the way that Roman Josi can? The list is short. You know, it's Quinn Hughes, it's Cale Makar. That might be the end of the list. I mean, I'm probably forgetting one or two other. Victor Hedman, maybe. There, it's, you know, although, again, the offense hasn't been there in terms of goals and assists and points, but his ability to drive play, still very much there. You know, Roman Josi continues to age like a fine wine, to use the tired cliche.
And he's taken a ton of shots this year, which I absolutely love. He has made sure the puck is getting on net, and he's letting them fly. He had 9 shots on goal against the Red Wings Saturday. That's one off his career high in regular season games, and he's played a lot of regular season games, over 900 of them. So he is taking charge at times when the team needs him to be the leader, in terms of, obviously he's the captain, but in terms of, hey guys, let's charge. We're going that way. We need to get pucks on net. We need to create rebounds. We need to get anything going for our big guns to have chances. And Josi has put it on his back and said, I'm going to be the shooter every time I get the chance. And I think that's great. I think that's what he should be doing. And I think everyone else will follow suit.
Who or what else has stood out to you in a positive way so far this season?
I think it is 2 starts. Juuse Saros has been good. I think he's been strong. I think there are no signs of a lingering injury from whatever the tweak was last week that held him out of the opener. And I don't think that's something you could assume, you know? You can never assume that anyone's going to come back from missing 3 days of practice in one game and be at their best, and yeah, he gave up 6 goals last night, but were any of those his fault? Maybe the last one?
We talked about the number of odd man rushes that both goaltenders have faced, because Scott Wedgwood faced a number of odd man rushes against the Stars, and I know that he had a rough game in the season opener, but you know, that's what having, you know, discussing the play of a goalie, it's a very nuanced conversation, because like a pitcher in baseball or like a quarterback, because it's such a singular position, when that player struggles, it's easy to pile on that player. But the Predators, as we discussed, have not been up to snuff defensively. And although UC Saros has shown in the past that he can cover up for a lot of mistakes, there is only so much he can do. Hopefully, as the Predators improve defensively and cut down on the odd man rushes, the numbers from UC Saros and Scott Wedgwood, when he gets in there, will improve.
Yeah, and I think every goal he's given up other than one has been either an odd man or a rush goal in general or a deflection. The second goal in Detroit actually may not have been either of those, but I think every goal except that one has either been something close to an odd man. It's not an odd man, the goal they gave up yesterday when Shea got left alone and gave the puck the McCann goal or Eberle's goal. But you get what I'm saying. These are goals he has not had a chance on, and he's stopped everything else.
He is a notoriously slow starter, but as he has shown over the past few years, that when he is on his A game, there are few goalies in the league that can match him in terms of his ability to make saves that he probably shouldn't. So the numbers aren't great. Really, none of the numbers are great for the Predators so far. That's why they're 0-3. But there are some signs for optimism. We try to be a glass half full and empty program. We have to appease all of our fans out there. Some are more cynical than others. I'm more of a cynical fan of my teams. So I appreciate those who are more optimistic. So these are some reasons for optimism as the Predators try to get back on the winning track Thursday against the Edmonton Oilers at Bridgestone Arena. And speaking of that, we will preview that game and look around the NHL. Coming up next, Max Herz with Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan with Max Herz this week of the Predators Radio Network. Max all over the station. You just heard him on Smashville Live. You'll hear him tomorrow for pre- and post-game coverage of the Predators game against the Edmonton Oilers at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow night. Always a treat when you can watch Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, two of the best players in the world. And they've had their way with the Nashville Predators in recent seasons. Since the 2018-19 season, the Predators are 4-10-1 against the Oilers. There was a time where the Predators could not lose to the Oilers. It was before this stretch. The Predators are 4-10-1 against Edmonton in their past 15 meetings. They have been outscored in those games 61-37. Most of these games have not been close. Leon Draisaitl in those 15 games, 37 points, 23 goals, 14 assists in 15 games since 2018-19. Connor McDavid has played 14 of those 15 games. He still has a modest 33 points, 8 goals, 25 assists in 14 games against the Predators since the start of the 2018-19 season. And the Oilers, they were off to a rough start as well. They started 0-3. I believe they were shut out 6-0 by Winnipeg early in the, last week. I was about to say early in the season. It's still early in the season.
Correct.
6-0 against Winnipeg. They lost 4-1 to their provincial rivals, the Calgary Flames, one of the best teams in the league so far this season, which is not something I expected to say at any point this season about the Calgary Flames. But the Oilers were 0-3, having been outscored in those games 15-3. They got their first win of the season on Tuesday night, defeating the Philadelphia Flyers in overtime. They were down 2-0 early in that game. Matvei Michkov scored his first two career goals, the hotshot Russian rookie for the Flyers. But the Oilers battled back to tie the game in the third period, and Leon Draisaitl scored the game winner in overtime on an assist from Connor McDavid as the Oilers take a win with them to Nashville tomorrow night. So When the Oilers and the Predators get together, it feels like if you're a betting man or betting woman, it feels like a Leon Draisaitl 3-point night is an easy bet. And it's going to be a test for these Predators because they are going to be facing some elite talent up front for the Oilers. And this is a really good opportunity for this Predators team, for all of the things that have gone wrong. If they can get right and beat the Edmonton Oilers, despite the fact that the Oilers are 1-3, they are still the defending Western Conference champions with two of the best players in the world. If you can win this game, it will go a long way in restoring some of the confidence that may have been lost in this team from the fan base in the early going of the season.
Yeah, and the Oilers are in a similar spot to the Preds. Their big guns woke up late in that game last night against the Flyers to win it, like you said. But before that, they'd had a lot of structural problems, and they had them in that game last night, too. They'd been beaten in special teams. And the one loss they had that you didn't mention, they somehow lost at home to the Blackhawks on Saturday night. And I did not get to watch that game. Preds were playing at the same time, and we were flying back from Detroit. But it appears that they lost to just Connor Bedard and Teuvo Teravainen in that game. But moral of the story, these are two really hungry teams. And yeah, the Oilers did get their first win. They'll have a lot of travel headed to Nashville, presumably as we speak, and are probably just getting here right now, just for a two-game road trip, just Nashville and Dallas, which is crazy to me how these trips go with the Pacific versus the Central. But the Draisaitl stuff, over the last six seasons, nobody in the NHL has more points against any other team in the regular season than Draisaitl has against the Preds. And there are a lot of other players who are playing a lot of other teams more frequently by being in the same division.
Yeah, it certainly has been something to behold, the dominance that Leon Draisaitl has had against the Predators in recent years. And we'll see some familiar faces for the Edmonton Oilers tomorrow. Of course, Matthias Ekholm has been a member of the Oilers now for a couple of seasons after the Predators traded him during the, I guess you could call it a fire sale, during the 2022-2023 season, along with Nino Niederreiter and Mikael Granlund and Tanner Jeannot. Matthias Ekholm has become such a big part of that team. He and Evan Bouchard on that top pair, they take down a lot of minutes, and they play often with Connor McDavid on the ice at the same time. Victor Arvidsson, also now a member of the Edmonton Oilers, traded from the Predators to the Kings a couple of summers ago, signed with the Oilers in free agency to play in their top six. He started the season on a line with Leon Draisaitl and Jeff Skinner, another new addition, another player who, by the way, has a lot of success individually against the Predators, despite the fact that he would only see them once or twice a year playing with Buffalo and Carolina. But I feel like every time Jeff Skinner plays the Predators, you can count on a goal or two. But Victor Arvidsson, you know, I thought that was a really good, sneaky addition, because he missed a lot of last season. He played in 18 games for the Kings last season. He had some serious injuries. But in those 18 games, he had 15 points. And although the Oilers are still trying to find that mix in their top six, Victor Arvidsson, I feel like, playing on the line with Leon Draisaitl, it could be one of the best bargains in the league by the end of the year.
Yeah, I think that's a good upside play by them. It's always good to see both those guys, and Preds fans still love them, as they should and always will, at Coleman Arvidsson, coming in for the Oil tomorrow. So I think those are two guys who Preds fans will never stop rooting for. And I think some retrospective on the Ekholm trade, there's a chance that trade just ends up being Ekholm for Tanner Molendijk, and being fair just at that point. The Preds see Reed Schaefer as a future NHLer as well. But it's interesting to start thinking about it now with how close Molendijk got to getting a chance to play NHL games this season.
And that was a tough trade for the Predators to make, considering everything that Matthias Ekholm meant to the organization as a homegrown player. I always felt that he did not get the respect that he deserved around the league for how important he was to the Predators' success.
And it's happened in Edmonton now.
Yes, absolutely. See what happens when you go to a Canadian market. People suddenly realize that you're good. That tends to happen.
Adam knew the whole time, everybody.
Well, I remember a couple of years ago, when he wasn't traded, I believe it was during the shortened season. At one point, right, he was the number one player on a lot of trade boards. And I remember talking to him about that, and he was trying to think of the bright side of it, which is, and he said something to me, paraphrasing here, it's good to know that people don't think I suck. Like, if I'm the number one player on the board, that means I'm obviously good at my job, which he was. He was a fantastic player for this organization, and he's been a really good member of the Edmonton Oilers on their top pair. Max, you told me that you had a comment that you wanted to make about the Predators' schedule thus far.
Yeah, I was heading into the season a little worried about how home-heavy the schedule was at the beginning, and it usually goes that way because of the CMA Awards at Bridgestone Arena in November. You got to play some home games at the beginning, end up being gone for 2 weeks, which they will be a little later this year in mid-November. So my thought was, you got to win your home games, obviously. That's how it goes. But knowing it was going to take time for this Preds team with the big new pieces, I worried about home losses piling up early in the season and their 0-3 overall, 0-2 at home. And just because you're home, those opponents are good. Like, it's a really rough home schedule to get things started. If the Preds do as well as they possibly can, in this stretch, you're playing the two teams you'd be competing with at the top of the division, which are the Stars and the Avs in this first month of the season. And if the Predators don't perform as well and are similar to last year in terms of getting going later, have to really play well down the stretch to make the playoffs, you're playing against the teams that you're going to be fighting with for those last spots, potentially, in the Kraken, who they lost to last night, and the Kings, who I think are a borderline team. And then on the east side, the Red Wings are a team like that, and it's just kind of littered all over the schedule. Plus, the Oilers are here twice in October, and then you have the must-win type games. You're in Chicago and then Columbus at home the next night on a back-to-back 2 weekends from now. That needs to be a four-point back-to-back. But one of those games will have to be Scott Wedgwood's first win as a Pred, assuming UC Saros starts every game between now and then. And then you have the road game in Tampa, which will be an emotional one for Steven Stamkos. Can you expect him to score in that game? Obviously, it would be an awesome story, but hopefully everything is settled in there where Stamkos feels more comfortable in the system, can go up against his former team already having some goals under his belt, and pocket another one. So I think just looking at that early schedule, I almost was not happy with how home-heavy it was, and it's playing out in the worst way that I thought it could so far at 0-3.
Well, they can rectify that by beating the Oilers. They've got the Red Wings on Saturday afternoon, and then they have the Boston Bruins on Tuesday, another very good team. And I look at the Central Division. Dallas is off to a 4-0 start. Winnipeg is off to a 3-0 start. They've allowed 2 goals in 3 games. Utah has been so much fun to watch. They lost their first game recently. I watched them beat the Rangers at Madison Square Garden. That was a fun game to watch. They're 3-1. Minnesota is 2-0-2, so they've lost 2 games, but they have points in all 4 games. Philip Gustafson, by the way, goalie goal last night. Always awesome to see. I had the privilege of being in Chicago for Pecorine's goal, which was awesome to see in person. Always great to see a goalie goal. But despite the fact that it's early, you do not want to dig yourself a deep hole early on, because 6 points, 8 points, that can be hard to make up over the course of a season.
Yeah, and the team that stands out to me out of that group is Utah. I was very high on them coming into the season. Every time they played the Preds in their Coyote form, they were snapping it around.
Yes.
Keller and Schmaltz snapping it around. And if someone like Barrett Hayton or Logan Cooley can make those steps that they need, and Connor Ingram continues to play well in goal, I think that's a potential playoff team. So, and the Preds only play them 3 times. They play everybody else in the division 4 times, except for Utah and the Wild. So, they're not going to have a ton of cracks at them, and the Preds won't go to Salt Lake City until the last road trip of the season. The Preds will be, despite being in the division, the last team to go to Utah for the first time. So, yeah, division looks good early. You can't really worry about it from a Preds perspective, but those division games will be coming. They'll be coming soon, and those have to be wins.
That'll do it for us tonight, Max. Thank you so much for joining me on Preds Insiders. Predators back in action tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena against the Edmonton Oilers. All coverage here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. For Max Herz, I'm Adam Vingan. Thanks for joining us tonight.